Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast, where we explore cutting-edge strategies to keep teams human-centered, drive innovation, and empower you with the tools and insights needed to help your team excel and thrive in today's rapidly changing world. Your host is Dane Gruneveld, a seasoned expert with over 20 years of experience enhancing team dynamics and innovation. Today, Dane is joined by Gaurab Mukherjee. Gaurab is a global thought leader in longevity and digital health science, striving to solve real-world problems by connecting people, ideas, and networks. Gaurab co-founded Activo Labs to improve population health and longevity. Tune in to discover, first, preventative health through data-driven insights. Activo Labs' mission is to empower people across cultures and continents to live long and healthy lives by reducing the risk of chronic disease. Second, fostering a culture of belonging and inclusivity. Gaurab emphasizes the importance of creating a workplace culture that promotes health and inclusivity, which not only enhances team engagement, but also contributes to overall well-being and productivity. Finally, generative AI and the future of work. The integration of generative AI in workplace tools is revolutionizing team dynamics by reducing repetitive tasks and driving greater creativity and efficiency in how teams operate. So, teamwork makes the dream work, and we're here to inspire your next collaborative breakthrough. Gather your team or put on your headphones, and let's dive in together.
Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast. My name is Dane Gruneveld, CEO of the Huddle 3 Group. And today I'm joined by Gaurab Mukherjee. Gaurab is the co-founder and CEO of Activo Labs. And I recently met him through a mutual acquaintance and was fascinated by the platform that Gaurab and the team are building. So welcome to the show, Gaurab.
Thank you, Dane. Thanks for inviting me and for the kind words. Yeah, great to be here. Bet.
And thanks for being here at such a late hour. I know you're in Singapore tonight, right?
As usual work hours, I would say. Yeah,
that's right.
We're trying to run or build a global business, right?
Yeah.
It is what it is.
That's wonderful. Well, maybe for the benefit of our listeners, you can provide us a little bit more about who you are, your story, how you came to be building this platform.
Yeah, sure. Well, I'm Gaurab, the CEO and co-founder of Activo. I'm a computer scientist by training. That's my background. I've been in the digital health space for the better part of my professional career. Prior to co-founding Activo Labs, which was like 7.5 years back, I was the chief business officer for Biopharmis. Before that, was heading the digital health practice for Napier Healthcare out of Singapore. Was an APAC and a European mandate that I had. Before that, Mindwave. Before that, IBM for a stint. So always been in roles that required the commercialization of digital health data sciences. And 7.5 years back, co-founded Activo Labs with my two other co-founders, Professor David Lai and Dr. Ming-Han Kwok. So they pretty much brought in that subject matter expertise in population health sciences and clinical sciences. In fact, David was a director here at the Institute of Public Health in Singapore. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the early stuff that we did in Activo was heavily influenced by David's research, you know, in sustainable aging. And I know, like, you know, I had that look like, what the hell is sustainable aging? And, you know, I remember attending one of his keynotes in a conference in Singapore, and he spoke about sustainable aging as the only way forward. As the world grows older, as we live longer lives, you know, lifespans are increasing, but commensurate to that, health span was not increasing. And his research was all about how do you take the conversation at scale globally, because this what is coming in front of us is not really sustainable, especially with the early onset of chronic diseases, right? It's just absolutely not sustainable. Say in the United States alone, last year, I think the healthcare bill was $3.7 trillion. That's like almost the GDP of the United Kingdom or India. And it's stated to be $7 trillion by 2030. It's not that far away.
Wow.
So this is 2017. We were having these conversations, and he said that the only way forward is going to be preventative healthcare. And you do preventative healthcare by identifying modifiable risk factors. And modifiable risk factors are mostly around your lifestyle. So you're smoking, and your substance abuse is number one and number two. Now, luckily, the governments of the world can do something about it. You can ban smoking, you can tax smoking, you can tax alcohol consumption, but you cannot tax someone for not exercising. Mm. You cannot tax someone for not getting enough sleep or sitting too long or not being in a good state of mind. And these are all modifiable risk factors. Now, how do you take that message, which I felt was very strong, to the Jane and Joe on the street? And that's where, you know, Activo Labs came about. Like, you know, we're going to be about addressing one of the biggest macro problem statements of our times, and how can we leverage technology in order to do so. So that's how we started, headquartered in Singapore. We have offices in New York, in UK, in Tokyo, development centers in India and also in the Philippines. We're live across 22 markets now. Yeah.
Wonderful. And it's such a important call to action, I think, for any team, for any employer. You and I were talking pre-show that employers, still the majority of their P&L is salary costs. It's still people, mm-hmm. right? We haven't replaced labor with robots yet, and I don't think we ever will. So employers that really want to have good quality products, services, customer experiences, but also companies that want to have healthy consumers to be selling their products and services too, I think there is this need for us all to be thinking much more heavily. We're already seeing it post-COVID, much more heavily about what we're doing in this workday to drive healthy outcomes for our employees and our community members.
Absolutely. And it's not sustainable. I think if you just look at it, you can have all the feel-good conversations, but ultimately what will move the needle always would be the economic incentive. And the economic incentive is right out there, whether it's in the United States, whether that's in India, whether that is here in Singapore or Malaysia. The cost is unsustainable every year, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you as an organization, you have to maintain the health insurances of your workforce. And every year with the premiums rising, and that's rising because they're making more and more claims. They're making more and more claims because they're more and more unhealthy. They're getting diagnosed with metabolic conditions at a very early age around the world. It's because of lifestyle, right? We're living, most of the world is starting to live in urban jungles. Mm-hmm. That has a limitation on the lifestyle. We're not getting enough sleep. That's thanks to electricity and Netflix. So there's a lot of stuff that's going on. So now that the economic incentive, right, is just very, very clear that, you know, you keep your workforce outside the four walls of a hospital, right?
Yes.
You keep them healthy. You expand their health spans. That is basically, you know, the absence of a chronic condition.
Yeah.
They stay in a good state of mind, and there's a clear correlation between that and productivity. But more importantly over here, we're talking about keeping your cost low year on year, because every year, the more claims you'll make, the Mr. Insurance Company would come and say that next year the price is different or the coverage is lower. Right. So how do you maintain that? So it's just not going to be sustainable. It's an economic problem statement, which clearly requires the need to have preventative health solutions where you can actually clearly see impact, measure it, and you can do it through data-driven means. And, you know, we have seen the precedents in history, historical precedents, is that you want to do anything at scale in a sustainable manner, you have to leverage the technology of your times.
Agreed. And I think, I know you say that the cost is the primary focus to manage for most employers, but the productivity, it's, while it's not as easy to measure, you know, you just said in the US, $3.7 trillion to $7 trillion by 2030. So we're going to see a doubling of that cost base. But the productivity measures are starting to become more available. And if you see lost productivity, I think in the US is somewhere around $9 trillion a year right now because workforces are disengaged, not healthy or happy in their work. So we're talking huge, huge value, both on the cost savings and the productivity gains, just from a dollars and cents standpoint. But then the human value is on top of that, just happy families, you know, connected communities, innovation, all of those things that come with more energetic, more, you know, abundant ways of living.
No, absolutely. I agree to everything you just said. I'll probably add one more thing, is that we've also noticed, and we've done a fair bit of research, and we keep reading a lot of literature in this space. And I think one thing that's fairly clear is about people like to, now in organizations, they like to, it's not just a job, it's also they want to feel that they belong there, right? Yeah. It's just about, okay, this is an organization that is focused on, that cares about its workforce, its employees. You know, they're talking about their health. You know, I like it because, you know, my colleagues, they are health conscious, or they run health score challenges every month, and the winner gets recognized. There are teams who are participating in terms of, you know, distance covered challenges, and then, you know, there are cycling challenges, and then there are mental health sessions. So then there's a community angle that also comes through, right? It goes back to our, you know, the Cro-Magnon brain about like trying to belong to a tribe, right? So we always keep looking for our own tribe, right? And I think you will see that. So it would be, I don't think we're that far away from that future where you would go into any organization worthy of its salt, and then you will ask, okay, what application or what system do I plug in my Apple Health data, my Fitbit data, my Oura Ring data, my Garmin data? Which platform do you use? Which one, you know, are we maintaining teams, and what's happening over here? So those kind of conversations would be there. Oh, what other programs do we have? Do we have a nutrition program? Do we have a mental health program, you know, that to keep people and the workforce focused? So,
yeah,
and we see that. I mean, we have seen that in popular culture as well. I was just having this conversation with a friend the other day. We were talking about this, one of our TV shows that we both followed while fairly. It was Billions, and then the Traders had an in-house therapist, right, to keep them focused and, you know, make sure that, like, you know, they're taking the right decisions. And at such a challenging high job where, you know, you need to be at your optimal performance day in, day out, your mental health matters as well. So now I think it was unheard of when you probably saw Billions come to television 6-7 years back. But right now it's like people talk about these things all the time. Yeah. You talk about coaching, you talk about, you know, your resilience, how are you in your best, not only physical shape, your mental shape as well. And that would lead to everything that you said earlier, right? Productivity. Yeah.
Yeah. There's actually MetLife here in the US. I've actually created a C-level title for employee care and experience.
Wow.
Kind of playing off that Billions piece, and they've been doing some really cool work around deploying coaching as a capacity right throughout the organization. And coaching and therapy can go hand in hand.
Absolutely.
Certainly I've found that in my experience, like having a good coach, you can really think about some of those mental fitness areas, like what's really getting in the way, what's causing you fear and anxiety that you're not being honest about to yourself and to your team members or to your boss or to your partner at home. So I think that's a really interesting shift. I'm glad you raised that. I also saw a video just this last week with Simon Sinek and Trevor Noah in conversation around friendship in the workplace. So I love the way that they talked about the importance of friendship. We spend, I think, 13 and a half full years of our life, you know, 24 hours a day, 13 and a half years at work, which is second only to sleep. So if we're spending all this time at work, why don't we have more of that belonging, more friendship, more human connectivity, which is one of my favorite pieces that I've seen Sinek talk about in a long time. And going back to your point with health challenges, that's a great way to connect people into things that they enjoy, but things that they enjoy and are healthy for the population.
Yeah. And I think, it should also not be just a self-selection situation. It's not just like, you know, oh, this is an organization. This is only about the ones who are training for their marathons or is a CrossFit trainer. No, it should be very inclusive as well. And that is very important. And I think that's where 100%. I mean, you spend most of your waking hours working. Right, you're not at home. Those are the, you know, spending time with your family. that's probably like, what, 5-10% of your overall waking hours. Most of it, you know, depends on where you are in the world. You're either working, you're commuting, you're doing you're running your errands, doing your course, but work is the big part. Now, with whom you do it, I would feel for people, you know, who have to go to work every day and you know, with people they do not like and they cannot stand each other, right? So for us, it's just at Activo, we made sure that, like, that environment of friendly banter is this very important. We do very, very serious work, but, you know, that's what I tell them, that since our work is so serious and so hard, do not ever drop your sense of humor while you are at work. Yeah, so it's very important to keep that. And again, all this, I mean, we have this friendly banter that's going on all the time on the Activo. We call it the Activo wall. It's something similar to the social walls that you have with the traditional social media companies. So people can post in pictures of, you know, the salads that they're having, and it's like, you know, trying to inspire their other friends. And then they're posting pictures of their runs, and then they're posting pictures of leaderboard, and there's like, ha, Dane, gotcha on this week, and then stuff like that. So that's all good. But I think we have also seen a fair bit of camaraderie as well, where people are trying to lift other folks up, especially someone who's probably not as fit, trying to enter and be part of that tribe. And it's, you know, it's just also about how to bring them about into that fold as well. So you've seen that happening.
That's a really important call out or watch out, which is from like an ableism standpoint. If you've got a team that's all about running and swimming, and then you've got someone who doesn't run or swim for whatever reason, are you actually not being inclusive? Are you holding people out of the group? So maybe you can dive into a few more of the breadth of challenges or solutions or data that your platform's monitoring, Gaurab, and how that creates more inclusivity regardless of where you're at in the world or what your preferences are.
So it's all comes down in the design of these programs as well. So maybe you can take a step back sometimes just to tell you what the platform is and what it does for your listeners. So we focused on real-time digital health data, as I mentioned earlier. That's my background. My background has been in the data sciences, looking into always the world of healthcare, digital health data sciences. So that's my background. But we focused on the real-time nature of digital health data. That is data generated on the fly from any IoT-enabled devices. So all the way from your Bluetooth-enabled blood pressure monitors, your glucometers, your smart rings, your smart watches, even your smartphones, they generate a wealth of data on the fly. And if that data, if you take it in, you harmonize it, can it be analyzed to create journeys that can help populations understand their risk of various chronic conditions and how they can go about preventing it? All this while, you know, making sure that they're playing and having fun to their way of their journey to good health, right? So that was always the approach. So what we did was we were also being able to take an approach such that the end user or our enterprise partners feel a lot of comfort in taking that technology and providing those journeys, those digital journeys, to their end consumer. So everything had to be really baked into deep science in terms of taking evidence-based approach, right? And then that's given who the founders were, you know, come from technology and academics. It was very, very important that whatever we tell them is not out of, like, you know, some of their, I don't know, health or fitness influencers. I'm not belittling them, but I'm just saying that everything that we can say, is there evidence behind it? The first approach that we said that, you know, what should be the manner in which we communicate something as complex as health risk to, you know, the average, you know, Jane and Joe, who's not a doctor or a sports scientist, right? If they're wearing a fitness tracker, it's generating so much of data from their heart rate variability, deep sleep, REM sleep, calories burned, steps taken, stairs climbed. So all the data that your fitness tracker is generating for a week, the user's like, cool, there's so much, such new data points. But after a week, the novelty of all that data dies down.
Yeah.
And what you're really left with is a disengaged user because you didn't tell them or you didn't provide them with meaning, right? So that's where we said that, okay, we're going to provide them with meaning. What does it mean? So what we were able to establish was that how much a person moves, how often he moves or they move, how often, with what intensity they move, and how often they sleep.
Yes.
That contextualized to age and a person's sex defined at birth, can that become a strong indicator or a proxy to long-term health? To find out that answer, we went and we acquired population biobanks globally, where we had lifestyle data of cohorts and corresponding longitudinal health outcomes, including access to mortality registry. And what our hypothesis was proven that yes, a strong proxy, a composite score, which the underlying parameters are how much they move, with what intensity they move, how often they move, how much they sit, how much they sleep, can that be a predictor for long-term or even cross-sectional health risk, just to cluster them in different buckets of risk. And once you're able to cluster them in different buckets of risk, right, you can actually start nudging end users, provide them with information which is about them in a manner which sits with them and it's strong. And there's so many ways to actually get that messaging out. And that's where we rely on some of our behavioral scientists helping us to create those journeys itself. Because at the end of the day, everything is a nudge, right? The fact that I am on this podcast, you nudge me or I had to nudge myself to get here. But it's a nudge.
Yeah.
It just comes. Some people just are, automatically they get a nudge, but some people just need an extrinsic motivation. Some people need intrinsic nudges. And what we are doing is that providing populations at scale with that by taking or utilizing their data, harnessing the power of science, utilizing or leveraging upon technology, which is the technology of the day, the present day. So that is, utilizing the power of a smartphone. And smartphone is the way to go in today's world, right? So 70% of the world's population has access to a smartphone. And I think less than 60% has access to a toilet, right? A personal toilet. So
that's crazy.
That's the way to go about it, right? Access to education, access to finance, access to healthcare. That's going to happen because the technology, the smartphone, this is such a powerful thing. Can you imagine this 20 years back, what it was and what it is today? It's just like, it's a part of your system. It's a part of your being right now. Right.
Yeah.
That's where it goes. And it's telling you a lot. The raw data and the metadata, forget like even wearing, this rings and a sophisticated device. The entire population, they are generating a lot of data about their lifestyle, which is a proxy to long-term health risk. And they're doing that by just, keeping the smartphones switched on. And the raw data and the metadata it's generating can tell you a lot about risk, potential future claims, behavioral, even clustering of our understanding of an end user, hyper-personalize that experience, because at scale, the system and the data can learn, and then it can really, really personalize that experience for you. So that's the ambition, and then that's what we do. Yeah.
It's pretty cool, and I always jump ahead on things like this, and I always think about teams and employer brands and what attracts and retains talent. So there's something in my mind that's like, man, imagine if, in the future, Dane or Gaurab can turn up and say, when I'm picking a career path, when I'm picking a company to work for, I can understand what that job function or what working for that company or working in this city will look like for my health outcomes.
That'll be fantastic.
It would be fantastic.
An employer able to say that, right? So yeah, the employer able to say that as a part of that people who worked in our organization, right? On average, they live 3 years healthier or 4 years in healthier. Yeah. and a better, and it could be everything, right? So which city you are in, you know, everything, you know, overall holistic well-being itself is not just about physical lifestyle and sleep, but like everything, you know, your nutrition, your relationship at work with your employer, how valued you feel. So that would all, you know, go into your mental state, right? And all these pieces would add up to those healthy years, right? And then they'll say that if you work in this organization, we ensure that, like, you know, you go into your retirement in good health, right?
Yeah.
So that'll
yeah,
be
absolutely.
A fantastic proposition, right? So you work with the, I don't know, the United States government or this metropolitan of Los Angeles, right? They're going into their retirement in good health, right?
Yeah.
They can say that compared to, you know, anything that's out there that could be a choice, a career choice could be, you know, factored by, could be determined with these factors. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I think it's very real. Had you come across Dan Buettner's work on Blue Zones?
Yes, yes. I've seen that, the Netflix video as well.
It's pretty cool. So when he looked at those Blue Zones, which were those communities where people live past 100, you had a higher propensity to live past 100, he broke it down into four main categories: activity, outlook, you know, people having purpose and not too much stress in life. Diet was a big one, very plant-based. And then connections. A lot of people were getting together for festivals and seeing neighbors every day. But you get the sense that the more data-driven you become and the more you look at belonging in the workplace, that rather than it being a community in the physical sense of what Buettner's work was, to what you just discussed, you know, working for that LA Metropolitan Transit Authority or whatever, you're going to start to see those factors that are driving longevity right there.
Yeah, 100%. And you can say that people will start talking about their organizations. Oh, yeah, we go into retirement in good health.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, we have fantastic healthcare coverage because, you know, in general, our
yes.
claims are really, really low. We have, you know, people who work in our organization do not fall that sick. But when they fall
yeah.
sick, you know, our coverage is fantastic. We get the best access to healthcare.
So yeah,
they will talk about that, right, people? And I know in the fact in the U.S. on my travels across the United States over the last 2 years, I used to hear about it, but I've seen that, you know, by myself being able to see that people do not leave their employers because they don't want to leave their health plans, right?
Yeah.
It's like, nope, I'm not going to go leave this company because, yeah, I need my diabetes insulin shots. That comes because I'm employed in this company. That's like, that is quite something. Yeah,
it is. Quite
especially
something.
For a market like the United States, it's so complex. It's so expensive. The healthcare bill is so huge.
No, I agree. And I know we're talking about, hey, go into retirement healthy, but you just mentioned sort of like living healthily through your work career. And one of my favorite books that I've come across in the last 12 months is a book called Die with Zero by Bill Perkins. And it talks about, hey, you know, we're living longer lives, but make the most of your health when you have it. So like, you know, today if I'm 42 and I've never skydived or I've never gone water skiing, go do it now. Don't wait till I'm retired and do it because my health won't be there. So what I'm sensing, or I guess what I'm getting at, is that the more that teams are healthy because they're adopting a data-driven approach to wellness, the more those people are going to be living their lives with their kids, with their parents, with their friends, doing the activities. And that lifts a huge level of energy and innovation in any business too.
100%. I think if they're able to, let's just put it, you know, achieve their dreams. You know, they're living, they feel at any point of time, you feel at any point of time that you're living a good life. And this is good, this is great. And then you'll ask, okay, what next, right? And I think that's where the magic happens, when you're always asking yourself what next rather than, oh, this is too much. I'm spent. I don't have, you know, my corners of my mind are not freed up enough for me to push that, you know, push the accelerator or a
yeah.
step on the gas, as they say in the US, for thinking or creating something intellectually, right? So intellectual excellence happens exactly when you tell yourself, what next?
Right? Yeah.
What else can I do? Where all can I apply myself to solve some problem or to achieve something? And that can only happen if, you know, a few things in your life is probably going okay. You're in good health, for sure. I think in historically, we probably only know of Professor Hawkins being able to manage that, not being in good health, but achieve everything
good
that
point.
He has achieved. But I've seen people like, you know, just they are in, they're taking care of them themselves. You know, they try to be in optimal conditions such that, you know, they have given themselves the best chance to be the best at work itself, right? So we spoke, I think, pre-recording, we spoke about the myth around work-life balance.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's for great work, it's going to be quality, not quantity, all the time.
Yep.
Yes, you have to work very, very hard to achieve something which has any kind of meaning or success, unless and until, you know, you win a lottery, and then that's your claim to success. But to achieve success, real success, be the best in your field, or be amongst the best in your field, in whichever field it is, right? You have to be very, very, very hardworking. There's no two ways about it, right? For you to do that, right, you need to stay in optimal conditions, both physically and mentally and intellectually.
Yeah. And you need to do it as a team, because if you look after your health, but you let your team members slave away and break themselves, then not much work gets done individually anymore.
Yeah. So organization is not about one person, right?
Yeah.
It's about a team doing something. And I think we are not there yet, but in the future we'll definitely see the, you know, you'll have data of the, you know, the kind of work that we are doing, the health score of different teams, and then can we start tracking the scores of the teams with high, median, active scores versus those with lower ones, right? How their performance have been. What is their feedback about their own organization? So I'm fairly certain, because that would happen. See, an Activo score of say an 80, to maintain it consistently is not very easy. That means, you know, a person who's consistently getting a regular exercise, is mindful enough to stay active throughout the day, and gets adequate rest and proper sleep. Mm-hmm. That person has a lot of other things sorted in other aspects of his life.
Yes.
Right? A person in super distress would not be able to, right, have that discipline and stay consistent at it. So the score can also be a proxy to a lot of other aspects of a person, that this person is probably, you know, already going up that Maslow's pyramid and is thinking about self-actualization.
Yes.
Because he's thinking about optimizing his body with good sleep, regular exercise, and staying active throughout the day.
Yeah. That's an interesting one, because you could see that playing into interviewing and selecting talent. I think it already happens without the data in some organizations that you know, skew heavily towards very healthy athletic lifestyles. Maybe you look at a Patagonia or an REI or those type of lifestyle brands. But the downside of that is that is there a risk in the future, as that data becomes more available, more prevalent, that people start being penalized for being unhealthy, that they're not getting the job offer? And I wonder how that plays out.
I think a bit of bias of that sort, you see that happening historically as well, right? Even without
you know,
that kind of data being that available. You know, women at a certain age, when they are, you know, about to, there's some questions then they ask about what are their plans about family, this, that. So those kind of things used to be quite front, right, and center. It's just about, I think, regulators have to step in terms of what can be or could be used. It has to be responsibly done as well. Like I said, It should not exclude people. It should include, you know, health is a conversation that yes. should not, it should be inclusive, right? We spoke about ableism as well. But we also, I think, the more you have data that you generate all the time, just by virtue of breathing nowadays, you have to also, especially companies like us, data companies, we have to tread very, very carefully and responsibly, especially in terms of separating, you know, private identifier versus mm-hmm. the personal health information. Those two things should yes. be kept separate. At no point of time should Dane's employer know that, you know, he slept 4 hours over the weekend, right? So yep. like, why did you sleep 4 hours over the weekend? You know, we give you the weekend to go and get rest. Yeah, you're playing roadblocks, or, you know, no, I was at the local pub, right? That's yep. all I did, and that's why the four hours of sleep. So no, that cannot at all, you know, be. And again, right now, I think there are strong laws around it, there's strong guidelines around it. So of course, GDPR and PDPA. Yep. And you know, of course, in the US, you know, you have to get your, if you're touching health data, you have to be HIPAA compliant, which we are. And ultimately, I think, you know, where it would potentially move is that everything would be consent based. So the you know, the sovereignty, your yes. own, the data sovereignty of an individual, right? I think yeah. that would be front, right, and center. You know, you would have the system again sending you a message saying that Dane, the health ministry or the health authorities in your region wants to know your data, such that they can do a survey, or they can understand, or for research purposes they want to know, you know, how much men your age sleep in that city, right? Are you willing to share your data?
So you can just toggle.
Yeah, so I think it just comes down to that having or providing or empowering that end user with, you know, the rights on their own data and who gets to see and what. So that's going to be, I think that's where it's heading. Yeah. We are building more and more of such journeys into our platform already. And I think that's where it'll happen. So consumers need to be fairly aware that, okay, yes, yeah, this is part of it's an organizational initiative. But mm-hmm. my employer, my boss, my leader, or even if I don't want anybody in my team to even know my health score, I have the right to choose so, right? Yeah.
That's powerful, that privacy by design. I like that. There's such a good conversation and so much depth to this whole shift around wellness and digital data-driven health. Before the show, we also talked about the advent of generative AI and what that means for teams at work, and particularly with you being a computer science guru, I'd love to sort of get a few minutes from you on what you're seeing with generative AI and how that's changing the way that we work and our opportunities for, you know, more mattering doing our best work.
Yeah, I think with being a computer scientist, and if you're not you know, rolling your sleeves and going into the trenches for a few months, the pace at which technology is changing, you become a dinosaur very, very quickly. I think with Gen AI and what it has happened in the last couple of years is that you use it to do a lot of stuff, a lot of work, right? Even right now, you know, we have our coding co-pilots, which are AI. You know, code reviews happen because, you know, there's an AI element to it as well. I definitely see AI-enabled applications plugged in across various tools of work, whether, you know, they're the Slacks of the future or the Microsoft Teams of the future. I think those, everything would work with a co-pilot. So just to help people. Now, what it definitely would do, is I think, you know, it's definitely reducing the repetitive work that you have to do, some of the mundane repetitive work. And that would free up more of your time where, you know, you could do more creative work. You can create, you can build, you can even spend time just thinking about a problem and how to approach that in a very creative manner itself. So I think it's just only going to make us better. I don't think there's the scope of replacement, but it's going to push more and more or it's going to bring out more and more ingenuity of the human existence. It's going to amplify our state of living itself. And think about it in this way. So where Gen AI meets healthcare is where data meets, you know, the capability of AI. So that experience, you know, the whole system would be telling you in a day-to-day basis what's happening. You know, you will get data from your toilet bowl, from your ring, from your smartwatch. Yeah. Your toothbrush will tell you that, you know, what kind of oral health. And all that experience is going through one single unified platform. And then that's the experience. You would be empowered with that information and an experience which is extremely and hyper-personalized such that you find meaning. And once you start finding meaning, that's when you do something.
Yeah, I like that. I've been fascinated by AI, but actually when I combine generative AI and the health data and the way that work gets done, even just the data in a business, how emails go out, what systems are being used, it's going to start to see things at a macro level that we're just not seeing, and we're not seeing in a timely fashion. So I think that's got to be a huge accelerator for team health at large, physically and mentally.
100%.
That's awesome.
Very excited about the future. Yeah.
Yeah, me too. And thanks for all the work you're doing. I think there were some great points today around the work that Dr. David Lai was doing around sustainable aging. I think that's a huge watch out for anyone, whether you're a parent, whether you're not a parent, whether you have parents, whether you're an employer, whether you're an employee, it doesn't matter. Like, we're all aging. So thinking about sustainable aging is huge.
So when I asked him that, and he simplified it always. He said, I asked David that, David, how do you live longer and healthier? And his motto, he said that, walk double, eat half, and sing in the shower.
Oh, I love it.
Summed it up, right?
That so, down.
Yeah, walk double, eat half, you know, and then sing in the shower. And that's the way it is. And I think that's always been our DNA. We always try to get something very, very complex and simplify it, and then you amplify it. And that's how it works.
That's cool. That's very cool. I love that. Love that soundbite. Love the soundbite on belonging and friendship. And the other big one I thought was fantastic was that when you're healthy, you get to ask what next. And you said intellectual excellence comes when you ask what next. So for anyone out there running teams, I think the work that you're doing is going to be super powerful now and in the future. And thanks for joining us on the show.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. If anyone wants to find you or Activo Labs, what's the best way for them to reach out, Gurup?
Yes, it's my first name at activolabs.com. Yeah, just
great.
Just give me a hold. Yeah.
Excellent. And we'll attach the website in the show notes.
Thank you.
All right. You have a good night. Get some good sleep.
Thank you for joining us. Remember that by embracing vulnerability, trusting our intuition, and approaching challenges with compassion, we not only strengthen our teams, but also pave the way for a future where collaboration thrives. If you're hungry for more insights, strategies, and research on collaboration, head over to thefutureofteamwork.com. There, you can join our mailing list to stay updated with the latest episodes and get access to exclusive content tailored to make your team thrive. Together, we can build the future of teamwork. Until next time,